caveat. I have recently had a baby. And so one of the things that you don't realize until you've had kids is how quickly you will spend money to solve problems.
That is once again Nat Pavage, a senior manager of product management over in Commerce Cloud. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Sales First Developer Podcast. And here on the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we're going to sit down and talk with Nat about composable commerce and some of the various technologies we can use to make shopping more interesting. But we're going to start, as we often do, with early years.
Oh, man. I think it was when I knew physics wasn't going to work out for me.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's like a long time. It feels like a long time ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, university, I loved physics and math, but I think once I got into advanced quantum, it was a little bit over my head. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do quantum computing instead.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then I realized that because of my grades, I couldn't get a job there. So I went into biophysics. And that's how I got into programming, because I started to code Bash, MATLAB, doing computational analyses of MRI images. And then I was like, yo, this is amazing. Like, technology is so cool. And then that's it. I've been in tech ever since. And it's been like more than 15 years.
You jumped into the way nerdy side of things. I love it.
I'm nothing if not like filled with hubris and overconfidence. So like I find that like I shoot for the like stars and fall on the moon, and now I work for Salesforce. So it worked out pretty well for me. Yeah.
I like it. Well, specifically, how did you get introduced to Salesforce itself?
So I was getting into Q&A. I was doing product. I'm actually back in product now. So I did like a whole 360, 180. That's not 360. It's like the same. 180. And somebody along the way, I was talking to IBM, said, look, love the technical side of you. I think you should be customer facing. And it just really kind of got into my head.
Yeah.
So I went into sales. I worked at a startup, and then I was at IBM in sales, where I sort of was like my boot camp. It was like I was learning so much, and then I was being headhunted by Salesforce at the time. And finally, I came over joining the marketing cloud team. At the time, it was Pardot. And then from there, did a little stint in software engineering, and now I'm back in product after having gathered all of this information on my journeys. So here I am.
Love it. How would you describe your current job?
It was funny. I was going to say the exact same thing I said like a few years ago when we had our first interview, which is like, I talk about stuff that doesn't exist. But I think what I would like to sort of rephrase that is I talk about the future, but the very like near future. So, you know, I work with our product team on long-term planning and how to, you know, bake innovation into Commerce Cloud. And so I'm just going to do a little plug that I started a podcast because I was really inspired by you, Joshua. And it's called the Salesforce Commerce Cloud Innovations Podcast. And it's just about all the things in e-commerce and around Commerce Cloud and the community that are very innovative and just things that like customers are doing today, but also things that customers can do. Because, you know, whenever we talk sci-fi, where I was like, oh, virtual try-on, that's so futuristic. But there's so much that customers can do right now. They can use these building blocks. And I think composable is the key. It's opening a lot of doors.
So, okay, let's dive into that a little bit. When you say composable is the key, what do we mean when we say composable commerce? Break that down for me.
Okay. So I think the more known term is headless. And if you know, one of my favorite things to do is ask people who are not in my industry to define headless without any context. And it's hilarious because it just doesn't make any sense, the term.
Right.
And so it's kind of funny. So give it a shot. Ask your mom to define it. It's the best. And headless is like this sort of like breaking of the paradigm, because e-commerce platforms used to ship with a starter store.
Right.
And so you would build on that front end and you'd be locked into that front end.
Right.
And but that's okay. That's what you wanted. That's what you needed. That's how you were executing. But then when you needed to re-platform, you had to rebuild your whole front end. And if there's like one thing that merchandisers and e-commerce directors do not want to do is be like, haha, so you know our website that makes millions of dollars? We have to shut it down to launch a new one. Yay. So headless is like breaking the paradigm. It's saying, well, forget one head, right? That's the website. That's one head. We have no head, headless. And now we have a whole bunch of microservices. But when we broke it, we discovered, oh, this is not so easy. Geez, there's like a reason that we had the monolith system.
Right.
Because now we have to worry about our own hosting. Now mm-hmm. we have to worry about our own services. We might even be buying servers. I mean, I used to sell servers, but I don't know who buys servers anymore these days, right? I don't know. And so Composable is like the iterative evolution of Headless. It's kind of like, I think, I'm not sure if we came up with it, but it is the name of our philosophy, which is like, let's take Headless. Let's take that idea concept, but make it easier. Give you the tools. Like, we'll host it for you. So you don't have to worry about that. But you can still have the freedom, flexibility of using any microservices you want, any combination. And it's really kind of enabling this idea of commerce anywhere. So we're seeing a shift from buying from a site to I want to buy from social to I want to buy online while I'm in store. And I'm sure we'll talk about this. I want to buy from my game while I'm playing, right? So you want to be able to buy anywhere you are in any endpoint. And so Composable is really allowing retailers and brands and, you know, other industries to create those experiences to enable commerce anywhere.
See, I think this, first of all, as somebody who used to work for a very large e-commerce site that shall go unnamed unless somebody just wants to, you know, scroll through my LinkedIn. But anyway, it's interesting to me because it is like old school 90s, early 2000s. It's like e-commerce and the idea of a website that was browsable, that had a cart to it. Those terms were synonymous, right? Like if I said, hey, I'm going to build an e-commerce solution back then, that's it. Like that was that you were like, oh, you're going to build something that people can like buy stuff from. And even then it was relatively radical. I'm going to offer a twist and let me know if I'm on spot or not, because one of the things we did here at Salesforce, which allowed us to create things like Trailhead and offer solutions that walk back through our services in very interesting ways, is we decided we're going to be an API first company. And I feel like when you say like microservices and Composable, you're kind of saying, when we say microservices, you kind of mean API first and then build later, right?
Yeah. But it's interesting that you say that, because in a lot of ways, that's where Salesforce was born. It was this concept of API. So it's only makes sense as an extension, right? Mm-hmm. You know, however, what if we made Composable is really an idea that's taking off within Commerce Cloud, but what if we made everything at Salesforce composable? Like, that's a possibility.
Right.
For example, let's say you wanted to launch an experience site, right? Mm. So you'd have a community, but instead of using the community builder, you build your own application in React and connect to every single Salesforce object. And then what you can do is limitless in terms of the experience that you're creating.
Yeah. Because why wouldn't you want your Experience Cloud, for instance, and we'll walk through this instance from your perspective, but Experience Cloud in something like Slack feels like it makes a lot of sense.
Right, exactly. And then once you throw Slack into the mix, then you say, well, Slack is also a platform and Slack is also has a back end. So what if, you know, we want to use Slack as a UI? That's one possibility. Or we could create our own front end and use a combination of Slack and communities and CRM, any sort of part of Salesforce that we want to create unique experiences.
Right. So walk me through that when it goes through your brain as to what that looks like for commerce, and what does that do to both like the user interface and the experience for me as a shopper?
So I'll walk you through examples, because I think we're getting into philosophy. And I think when we start talking abstractly, it's difficult to see the business applications.
Right.
So I will frame this thesis in the perspective of three examples. It's like an essay. Like I'm going to read, I'm going to read you an essay. It's going to be exciting. I'm just kidding. Point number one. Okay. I'll give you one example.
Okay.
This is a concept of group shopping. So we all have the experience in Uber. Actually, Uber recently launched this. I claim that they stole it from me. But you go on Uber and you set your order and you want to, you know, let's say you and I are eating and I share my order with you, but I want you to pay for your stuff and I pay for my stuff. And so Uber does this thing where they allow you to both add from the menu and then split the payment afterwards, but you're all ordering together.
Right.
Well, that concept is, the primary need for that is probably food, but that concept could be taken into any industry. So retail, let's say you have, and you can use, so this is where we can start to use Slack. So let's say we use a Slack channel mm-hmm. instead of the consumer getting an, you know, invitation to use Slack, joining a channel, they create a group dressing room, that looks like what your brand wants it to look like. Mm-hmm. But we're using Slack as a microservice in the back end for you to join a dressing room. And then from here, you can start to use the microservices from Commerce Cloud, like cart to wish list, to say, you know, you're organizing maybe a wedding and you're shopping for a dress with the bride and the bridesmaids, and you guys want to upvote, downvote dresses, you want to make a decision, and you want to split payment, maybe you want to chip in for the bride. So you need this like flexibility. Mm-hmm. And you can just use Commerce Cloud from a composable perspective. Maybe you want to use Mobify to actually build the UI to have the services. But then you can break down, use all the microservices, and have this essentially group shopping experience. And what's great is that it's not limited to one use case. This is applicable in travel. This would be a great one. You want to organize a trip with your friends and or your family. I mean, how complicated is that? Where are we going to stay? What are we going to eat? How many times, right. you know, you have Excel sheets of like things you want to see, and it's just, and usually there's like one project manager in your, hopefully a project manager as part of your group that knows how to do all these things. Mm-hmm. But what if you created a group itinerary and you created the digital tools that allowed people to do this without getting into Excel?
Right.
And some people might say, well, Slack is a, you know, a B2B software. It doesn't have the scale for millions of online consumers chatting together. Granted, but this is where you can bring in things like Heroku and bring in your own scale services to completely decouple from the enterprise aspect of the platform and mm-hmm. the products that we're selling. And so my whole thesis here is, why wait? Right. If you, as a brand, as a retailer, if your paradigm, if you live in the paradigm of, I'm waiting for this product release, or I need the perfect product to do what I'm doing, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So why don't you just go out there and start building and imagining what your customers want to do with your brand? Mm-hmm. And the building blocks are already there. A lot of these technologies are available today.
Yeah. Well, and so I think I'll counter that point, because it doesn't make a lot of sense for a company like Amazon. Let's just take the big dog, right?
Let's take shots at Amazon. Let's do it.
Bezos is definitely listening to the show. Right. But like Amazon's not going to, they're not going to create like the Slack Ohana, right? Like they're going to create a Slack community group kind of thing. I mean, maybe they would, but I think Slack's response would be they don't have to. Like Amazon could release an app in whatever Slack calls their marketplace. And then if you and I need to buy stuff for a trip, we could create our own Slack channel and then just use that app in our portion of the Slack world. And it's not scaling up to millions of people. It's just scaling up to you and I.
Oh, you're right. Oh my God, you solved my problem.
There we go. Personal right. question for you. Do you like shopping?
Oh gosh. Huh. I shop constantly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I'll also just caveat, I have recently had a baby. And so one of the things that you don't realize until you've had kids is how quickly you will spend money to solve problems.
Right. I bet.
So I've bought like every bib imaginable just to see if something works. And so I've become a prolific shopper. And what's interesting about what you said, you know, it's just harking back on something earlier in the conversation, which was like, we're in this linear e-commerce paradigm. Yeah. We go online, we search, right. and then we look at a grid. Yeah. And we're no longer inspired. You know, one of the things I loved when I used to go places before having a child is walking into a store. It's funny. I took my kid to Indigo. Indigo is like a bookstore here in Canada.
Okay.
And she didn't appreciate any of the design. I was like, how could you not, you 7-month-old baby? Look at this beautiful layout and these really silken scarves. But anyway, that's what we used to do. We used to go in the store and we used to be inspired. And now we're like looking at this 2x2 grid online. It's very 2D.
Yeah.
And so what some brands are doing, and I think that shopping will go the way that games have went. We went from single player to mm-hmm. MMORPG, right? So just MMO, you know, we went from shopping together in person, and then now we're in e-commerce and somehow we're completely alone.
Yeah.
But what if we could put that back and have a digital experience. Of course, metaverse was the buzzword of last year. This year is Gen AI. So we'll talk maybe a little bit about that. But what if you could shop in the metaverse? And what if you could shop with your friends, right? So, and there are tons of Salesforce partners out there doing that. You know, last year for the Dreamforce keynote, we created a concept with Unity where you could shop for a vehicle and you could see the vehicle. And in the luxury segment, there might be some faster movement because, you know, let's say you're configuring your car. Right now, the way that you do your custom car, if you're that wealthy, is you get a brochure, you pick your door, you pick your color, you pick your material, and you hope that it all comes together in the end.
Right.
And it's like $200,000. So it's a big purchase to make with so little information.
Right.
But what if you could visualize it? And the same thing with traveling. What if instead of going online and booking your resort and then pulling up all the reviews, sorting by the one-star reviews and wondering if you can live with those.
Right.
What if you could just be transported to the resort and see what it was like and make a decision right then and there without leaving the experience, right? So
yeah,
this concept of now the experience is back online and we're also able to have context, contextualize it, and share it with our friends and be social again.
Well, and I think it's in those specifically, those two examples I think are interesting because, as I'm sure you're very well aware of, one of the biggest blockers for VR to get into things like the realm of e-commerce and shopping and the non-gaming aspects of VR, because gaming is a huge driver for you for VR. But basically, the biggest blocker is that I need to have a device at home, right? And I have one, but I'm a huge gaming dork, so that's not surprising. But I think what's interesting about things like travel and car shopping is that those are still two like in-store experience. It's common for people to go see the car, right? Like, so sake of full disclosure, big commerce site that I used to work for, one of the reasons I got hired was to help them build out their furniture department on their store. And I have a whole gig about like these are things that I thought would fail on the internet and I was so wrong about it, right? Like the first time I heard about YouTube, I'm like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Nobody has the bandwidth to sit there and watch videos all day long. So
Oh my God, that's so funny. Can we have a podcast episode where we go through each of your predictions and then like
We should discuss
like what happened and right. How wrong like, you were.
And how wrong was Josh with Josh Burke? It'll be about an hour and a half.
We'll have like a scale.
Right. Exactly.
From it's 11
almost every time. Also Twitch. When the first time I heard about Twitch, like you're going to pay people to play video games. Really? Really? Yeah, they will. Millions of dollars.
Wow.
I'm like, yeah, I'm going to build this thing for you, but who's going to shop online for furniture? Turns out lots of people will do it. But when it comes to things like buying a car, and especially like what you're talking about, like the high-end experience, like, and the nice thing about that is like a Mercedes-Benz shop, they have the money to pay for those high-quality VR goggles that like will show you the texture of the leather of the interior of the car that you just selected. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like people actually used to go to Best Buy to listen to stereos because that's all the only way they could do the audiophile thing. You know, it feels like we could have a return, you know, to that, but in very specific segments. And as you're saying, the software already exists. Like it's not, we're not talking about teleporters in Star Trek here. Like they could be doing this right now.
Oh, well, and our customers already are. Actually, one of our customers, Lucid Motors, has a wonderful VR. I actually visited them in San Jose in California and I put on, and they actually have their VR headsets at the showroom.
So
you go in there and you put on the VR headset there and you experience the vehicle. And I will say, what's interesting about that is one of the limits, if we could talk about some technological limits that we're coming up against, is the verity of the image. So we're still not there, the quality.
Yeah.
And actually one of the sort of last bastions of the virtual try-on, the elusive virtual try-on for clothing is a very technically difficult problem to solve. Mm-hmm. We have virtual try-ons for glasses. We have virtual try-ons for jewelry. We have actually a ton of partners in our ecosystem that are already doing this. We've got Obsess. They're doing this like holiday sale with Coach online. It's a wonderful story that incorporates gaming. I mean, if you really want to spend a lot of money for the holiday season, go to that. We have the labs. They work with like our media companies. And they create these like concert experiences that are also shoppable. And then we have 3Kit that creates the virtual try-on aspect of it. So we've got a ton of partners and a ton of brands are still doing it, but there's that like quality is still not quite there. Like, it's not like I could transport you to the resort and you would see a photographic version of it.
Right.
So we're still a little bit a ways away from a true, you know, do we like live in a simulation at this point, right? Like that kind of experience. We're still not there yet, but it's coming. There's lots of companies working on it.
Yeah. Well, and another sector I could see, and I was just talking to a friend of my wife's who's a realtor, and it's like, if I needed to, in 3D walkthrough, we were talking to her about like, what's the difference between hiring a good photographer to help sell a place versus doing one of these 3D walkthroughs. And I think the 3D walkthroughs are also sort of that uncanny valley aspect right now, because I've done the 3D walkthroughs and then I've gone to the house and I'm like, you were mostly right. Like, you were mostly correct. But I feel like that's one area where it's like, even if it was close, if VR could give me... Because I remember us looking in a house and the realtor asked us, so what do you think? And my response was, you got a really good photographer. he fooled me on every one of these rooms. Every one of these rooms is smaller and darker and worse than I thought. But your photographer did their job. But I feel like VR would be able to, like, you know, unveil that a little bit better.
It would be, yeah. So, I mean, you're right. Like, it's not going to be exactly like, it might even be worse from a photography perspective quality for real estate, but it could give you the sense of like how big the room is, right?
Right.
And then with the other layer of it is because it's digital, now we have a storytelling component.
Right.
So not only are we showing you the place, but we can tell the story of the brand, the story of the material. You can interact and engage with the story. You can have different moving parts. You know, we even shot around the idea of like, what if you could get into the car and then you could play a little game where you're driving the vehicle, right? So these are the things that like you can get in a digital mixed reality experience that you're never going to get in reality.
Right.
You know? And let's like do a shout out to augmented reality before just talking about VR. Like, what if you were at a store and you saw like a tent and you could use your phone to have it unveil what the tent unfolding would look like and what it would look like under various conditions. And it could tell you the story of durability, quality, et cetera. So there's a component of using digital tools, not just in and of themselves for re-representing the physical format, but the ability for you to experience the story of the brand and be inspired in a new way and have that. Because a lot of brands are hoping that you're reading their story and understanding their story, but their story is communicated in a text online and the about page. And I'm just like, I'm not going to read three paragraphs. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah. And can I just say, I wish more physical stores did have a mobile app to them.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So that I can like find the thing that I want. And because, okay, so to go back to my question, I hate shopping. I hate it. I'm bad at it. I once got asked by security if I was casing the joint because I was taking so long to make a decision about
the digital
camera.
I can't believe it. I'm like, who does love shopping? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But, okay. I want to go into like why you hate it, but I'm not going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
it's boring to me. It's like, I'm the kind of guy who browses online while I'm doing other things. Like even shopping on like an Amazon or shopping, like it's almost never like my primary task. And so for me to actually like, and I'll tell you what, the pandemic did no favors here because
then you were forced to shop online.
Was forced to shop online. And then I realized I can get anything delivered to my door and I don't have to leave and I can spend. Okay. You're going to like this story. I went to a local grocery store here, it's called Mariano's, but it's like a Jewel, right? It's a big grocery store. And I was on my way home from another chore and I went into the store and I saw the lines at the store and I literally had a shopping cart and I walked out, went home and ordered it off of Instacart because I wanted my afternoon back. That's how much I hate shopping now. That's how much I hate shopping.
But see, but you must like online shopping then, if that's the case, or do you still hate it?
I enjoy aspects of online shopping because the nice thing, here's what I like about online shopping. I can do it all afternoon long and still get three other things done.
Yeah. And I bet for you, it's about efficiency. Cause, and that's, this is a good point. Like, and you know, I'm going to skip over the gendered aspect of what we're talking about. Like, is it any surprise that women like shopping? you know, there's different kinds of shoppers. You know, I enjoy the hunt. I enjoy like looking on even Facebook marketplaces and finding special items. I like save them and I see if anybody's like bought it and then I lowball them. It's like a whole thing, but you like the efficiency. And so that's the other thing about moving online and offline. And I had this conversation with someone yesterday that BOPIS, buy online, pick up in store. Oh yeah. It was with Kayla Schwartz, our director of industry insights.
Yeah.
She said that BOPIS was the bridge, the omnichannel bridge that brought online and offline together. And so moving online and offline and having your personal profile determine how you interact and how you shop, you like efficiency. So why don't we create a place where you can reorder things you've done before or automatically pre-prepare your order? Like for grocery, what if you, you know, if you're buying the same thing every week, why don't you just have your cart pre-filled with those things and you change the quantities or swap items?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's that aspect of personalization that's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to your Slack concept, it's like my wife, to bring in the gender question, my wife doesn't really like shopping either. And so like I had to go buy jeans, basically. It's just buying, like I hadn't bought jeans since the pandemic. And she's like, oh, your jeans are like gnarly. And of course, she doesn't want to come with me.
Did you tell your wife that her jeans were gnarly?
No, my jeans. My jeans were gnarly, and she was correct. But it's like if I could have, but like I would like if there was a Slack application that helped us group shopping, even if I'm in the store and she's not,
right?
Like that's compelling.
Right. Yeah. Because then you could be like, hey, what do you think about this? I got these two things. I mean, I would not want my husband there because he would be like, why are you shopping? I'd be like, you don't have to know about this. So, but
he doesn't have to see all the things that go in the cart.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm like, well, we talked about this yesterday when you were ignoring me. So, anyway, well, Joshua, you're going to love this. How about if you could shop from your TV?
So, yes, because another phrase getting tossed around, shoppable ads.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the first thing I thought of from that is the fact that we've reached an age of technology where people are offering people free high definition televisions that have an ad bar on them.
Right. Right.
So tell me a little bit about what a shoppable ad is and how does that play into this?
This is funny because it's kind of like a 180 because there are these channels at QVC that are selling obviously via the TV and then you like call them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gone through this transformations to subscription. Media has moved from cable to intelligent boxes. You got the Apple TV, the Roku. Well, now that we're not stuck to the cable box, well, now we are on a connected device. Now we can do some amazing things. And since media streaming, and I listened to this actually amazing episode on Hard Fork about, was it Hard Fork or Pop Culture? Pop Culture Happy Hour about how they're having difficulty identifying revenue because the whole revenue thing is changing. And so, well, you know, as prices increase, as they try to make more money to make more content, they're thinking of offering ad-supported services. I think Netflix has already come out with this. Like, you pay less, but you have to watch the ads. So we went through a period of no ads. Now we have reintroducing ads again because it's a good revenue source. Well, what if you could take the ad and add a shopping layer to it? And so you're there sitting with your Apple TV, you're looking at a skincare ad for L'Oreal cream. It's very compelling and you want to press the buy button. And so this is what Composable is allowing us to do is you can connect your Apple Wallet to your local user ID. They have your address and without having to enter in your information, you can simply buy things from an ad. And making that ad shoppable is an interesting concept because we can have the actual provider of the service is the advertiser. It's not the brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a Univision. So say Univision would allow a L'Oreal, would give them a spot, would federate, decide when the ad was shown. L'Oreal could have the option to be on there on Univision's marketplace. So this is where you require sort of a marketplace system. And it could be Salesforce's marketplace, or it could be one of our partners' marketplace, or Miracle, or two amazing ISVs that we have. And then so L'Oreal would be the brand that would be onboarded onto the marketplace. They would list their product and Univision would determine when their product was shown and you would be buying. That order would go to L'Oreal and they would ship directly to you. So we've got Composable, we've got marketplaces, and now we have a new revenue stream for advertisers. So, and we know that media is going through a revenue transformation. They're being asked to make more and more and more content.
Right.
But you're paying a flat fee. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so if they can use e-commerce, because they're doing a lot of merchandising and now the, you know, Barbie phenomenon is really fascinating to me. We want to talk about Barbie for a minute. But it's this concept that like story and merch go together. And if you have a movie, then you have an opportunity to sell more of a particular product because, again, we are, as consumers, are driven by the story. So it's just like a natural evolution of TV for it to become shoppable.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do a whole other episode on the Barbie movie.
We could.
Have you seen?
No. Okay.
Same.
I'm dying to see it, but I can't because of my baby. I was posting on Friday. Great. Barbie Heimer comes out today and I'm just going to wait a few weeks.
Yeah.
Wait a few weeks until I can rent it.
Yep. Exactly. Well, it's the year 2023 and I don't think I get paid anymore unless I talk about AI. So,
AI? Did we like not say it enough? We should go back.
You only mentioned it like once. So,
oh my gosh,
that's only like a nickel. I'd get a nickel for that. I get a nickel every time we say AI. Where it actually spiked for me is when you're talking about like if we go back to like 3Kit. Am I saying that right? Is it 3Kit? Yeah.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
So there's already this layer of the physical and the digital. And every time you say like, you know, this try-in experience, it's the digital trying to layer itself on top of the physical in a realistic way. Mm-hmm. How do you see AI affecting that kind of thing?
You know, it's funny. My mind went into a different way. I think there's lots of opportunity for AI to do image generation. Mm-hmm. I think for virtual try-ons specifically, we do need variety of size because everybody, one of the challenges is all brands fit differently and everybody's body's different.
Right.
So we could, and now with the new Gen Z, we're moving away from, I wouldn't say we're moving away from fast fashion, but there's a lot of interest in sustainability and resale and slow fashion. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of going from manufactured to tailor-made. And so there's lots of opportunity for AI imaging, image processing to be able to understand your true size, your body size, and then do recommendations based on that, based on information about the product and processing. But there's also a place for smart assistants. And I know this is not where your question was going, but like I'm kind of stuck on this. I'm talking to a partner called Soul Machines and they create these physical manifestations of digital assistants. They're actually even working with celebrities on farming out their images so that you could have like Jennifer Lopez represent your brand, but then you could like ask JLo for the best outfit advice. You know what I mean? When you're at the store.
Gosh.
It's so cool. It's so cool. And we've recently released Commerce Concierge, which is a smart, intelligent bot. And there's so much there, you know, especially with GPT blowing up. It's not just about understanding context, understanding what the customer is saying, but then being able to recommend products based on the data that we have about them on file and being able to do small talk and sentiment analysis so that you can actually have a conversation. There's so much from natural language processing to natural language understanding to replication.
Yeah.
And then image generating an actual persona. And it's funny because people are more comfortable talking to robots than they are people. It's funny. Like, so if you actually know that you're talking to a robot, you're more likely to ask them questions.
Yeah.
So there's lots of places. There's a ton of stuff you can do in that area. I realized I was going to give you three examples. Now this is my fourth.
Well, and I think that's interesting because, you know, the rise of chatbots is real. And prior to conversational AI becoming popular, like we were getting to the point where all the words you were just saying, right? Like predictive AI was doing a pretty decent simulacrum. Like it was
doing. Did I say enough buzzwords or should I add more to this? Just tell me.
But it's like they were getting pretty human like. And in the last time we talked, you were even giving examples of like, you know, bots that are very helpful in an online and even social kind of way. And I think when you start spinning that into the realm of generative conversational bots, it can get kind of interesting. It's also one of the few places I'm pretty comfortable because if your commerce bot hallucinates and offers me a product, you know what I mean? Like I feel like the guardrails are so much better than.
Yeah, hopefully they don't try to steal your wife. Hopefully not. Because now a program for that.
Fair. Group shopping went to a whole new level right there. Yeah. Yeah. But it's, yeah, no, I think that's a, you know, it's a very, because I sometimes don't know what I want. And sometimes we don't know what the products are actually out there. And
yes. And yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, but, yeah. The only way that we have to look at products online is through search.
Right.
And so if we don't know what we're looking for, how effective is search at getting us to where we need to be? Right.
Right. And the phrase I keep using when it comes to AI is jumpstarting, right? It's so much easier to jump in and get to that end point where if I describe what I need, you can kind of grant me what I want. I was working with somebody on an AI demo, and I love their analogy, right? Like predictive AI. So old school search, you could ask it, what's the current weather? Predictive AI can tell you what the weather might be like this weekend, and generative AI could tell you what to put in your card in because of the weather.
I thought you were gonna say generative AI will give you a hallucination about what the weather should be, but isn't. But I like that example.
It could do that too, right?
It could, but it's
like,
if you
like it could get me to the product that I didn't even know existed.
That's a very good like encapsulation of what's possible, and I think the tools of the past, like the way that we used to like develop and ship B2B software, was like, look at all these tools, look at what you can do with it. But we really moved away from that to like, look at these business results, like look at the end point of this analysis. And that's sort of what we try to do with all the Salesforce products, is we try to package that up into a business result that you can use. So the more automated these tools are, the better for our customers, because you're right, like you don't need to know what's inside the black box to start using it, start A/B testing and start to reap the benefits of it within your customer base.
And that's our show. Now, as a repeat guest, I didn't ask after Nat's favorite hobby. I asked, what hobby does she want to pick up?
They used to make webcomics. Yeah, I actually have a list of webcomic ideas that I haven't been able to materialize. So I promise you, Joshua Burke, this is like a promise, that I'm going to make a webcomic next year once I start going back on the road again, and I will use that airplane time to do it.
I want to thank Nat for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.